This story that I just had right before you came on, Pat, I mean, can these serial killers be that smart where they plan this out and then they can even methodically change things?
Well, you know, I think this story is a little bit exaggerated because this crime actually did happen. These a couple of crimes happened about, it's about 10 minutes, 50 minutes from my house. Because it's in Prince George's County where I live. And I remember when this went down, and I was very interested in it because it was two mother-daughter crimes. I mean, that's very unusual for somebody to go in and kill a couple like that, especially a mother-daughter. And, you know, I find it kind of amusing, though, that they're saying he's so brilliant he duped a FBI profiler, because when it went down, I said, these are connected.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big surprise to me because, they were so close together in Prince George's County, both in time. They were right one following the other within a few months, and location. They were, you know, very close to each other. And I said, come on now, are you really going to have two different guys out here committing these types of crimes right on top of each other? I mean, it could have been a copycat. But just because in one crime he moved the bodies, put them in their car and drove it away and burned it up, isn't exactly necessarily a brilliant MO change. I mean, this happens quite often with serial killers. And sometimes I'm not even planning it out that much. It's just a simple fact is they get a good idea and say, last time they went in the house and found all the stuff there. I think I'll move the bodies next time. I mean, it's not rocket science. And maybe the guy did look at a few serial killer books or some forensics books, but that's not that unusual in the world of serial killers. So I would say that FBI profile maybe just screwed up.
And Pat, what's the definition of a serial killer?
Well, there's a couple of different ones. The FBI's definition of serial killers is somebody who commits a premeditated crime by murdering somebody for the fun of it, and he does it at least three times, and he's got downtime in between. So it's not like a mass murderer who goes and shoots and shoots and shoots, or somebody on a spree who runs, you know, he jumps in his car and he kills somebody and drives down the road and, you know, 12 hours later he kills somebody else and he keeps going. This is somebody who kills, goes back to his regular life for whatever period of time, and it could be a couple weeks, it could be a couple of years in between the crimes. They say three. What I always say is when you end up with, for example, a raped and murdered woman in the bushes who is jogging, that's a serial killer, and you already know it because nobody else is going to cross the line to raping and murdering a woman in the bushes unless he's a serial killer.
Right.
So we just don't know what he's done before or when he's going to do the next one.
Good point. Now, your story about how you became a profiler is very strange. Tell us about that.
That is very strange. Most people, you know, write me to these days. They send me emails and say, how can I become a profiler? And I'm like, hopefully not the way I did it.
Yeah.
Hopefully you'll go to school and, you know, get a regular education or join the FBI or something. But for me, this all happened to me 20 years ago in 1990. I was living in Prince George's County in my home. I was homeschooling three kids. And I was a little shy on extra money because we only had one income. And staying home with that wasn't exactly paying the bills. So I would rent rooms to students from the college, but I had a room available, and a girlfriend of mine had hired this fellow at work, and she was dating him, and she said, Pat, why don't you rent to him? And I said, well, I don't know, let me think. He's not a college student, but I kind of needed the money, and I actually had him, I actually did a background on him. I had took him to the police station, had him fingerprinted, came back clean, didn't drink, didn't smoke, didn't do drugs, but...
And dated your girlfriend, right?
And dated my girlfriend, was coming to our church. And so I said, well, I shouldn't be too, you know, judgmental. He seems like a nice fellow, a little goofy. But within the 4 weeks as he was living here, I noticed that he was constantly weird, shall we say. I noticed he told strange stories that seemed like lies to me. He decided he was a ninja. He liked to dress in all black and call himself the Avenger. He had bad names for women. There was just something wrong about this guy constantly. And about 4 weeks later, my friend decided, indeed, she agreed, and she thought it was pretty creepy. So on a Saturday afternoon, she broke up with him.
Oh, no. So she breaks up with him, but he's still renting your house, right?
A room in my house, correct. And one of the things that usually happens before a serial killer strikes is something goes wrong in his life. He either loses his job or his girlfriend dumps him or his wife leaves. He's pissed off at society. Well, that was that afternoon on a Saturday. And he walked home from her house, which is one end of the bike path, to the other end of the bike path, which was where my house was. And in between, a young woman who was jogging, 22 years old, beautiful young woman, brilliant woman, an intern at NASA, was brutally raped and murdered.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and so the next day, I just had this feeling about the guy. So I was joking. I said, hey, were you on the path last night? And he goes, well, yeah. I go, okay.
He admitted that?
He admitted to being on the path approximately the time she was murdered. But his claim was the reason he didn't run into her and see the murder go down was because he suddenly decided he was scared of the dark and crossed across a stream and waded across it to get up to the main road, which made absolutely no sense. And then he walked away, and I thought, oh, come on, that's the most bizarre story I've ever heard. And so the next day when he was at work, I searched his room, and I found he'd thrown all his clothing away from the night before. He'd thrown away his jeans and a shredded shirt and his tennis shoes. It's a mud wrapped in plastic from that stream.
Oh, my.
It's a knife, all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, what do I do about this? And I thought, well, I'm not real familiar with homicides or I never talked to the police before about anything. But, you always hear, I always say, if you know something, you're, as a good citizen, you should come in.
You better go. Go with your gut.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went into the police and I told them about the guy, that he was on the path time the girl was killed. I told them what had happened, and I gave them the evidence. And they just basically kind of laughed at me and told me to go away. And
they had no suspects, right, at that point?
They had zero suspects, and this was 2 days after the homicide. Never even interviewed the guy.
That's crazy.
And, yeah, it took me 6 years to get the case reopened when a new detective came in, and he said, what the hell were they thinking?
You mean, Pat, you're telling me that, and you were going to have to jump ahead a little bit to tell me how you got him out of your house. But do you mean to tell me that 6 years went by after this murder before they decided to look at him?
Exactly. Exactly. And that really stunned me. I couldn't understand it at all. I thought, well, I'm not saying the guy did it, but good Lord. I can't think of a better suspect to put on a silver platter and hand to the police.
Right.
Even if it turns out not to be him.
Right. I mean,
you want to know about a guy who said he was there at the time the murder went down.
Well, and I've always said there are no coincidences. The fact that he's there, it's convenient, he's weird, these strange things are happening. My gosh, it would be a slam dunk.
And on top of that, he had written a story, which he gave to me a week before the crime, which was labeled My Silent Enemy. And it was about a guy with a split personality. And one of the sides of his personality was hunting filth and vermin in the park.
It was him.
Well, that him you're talking about lives about a mile down the road from me now, totally free. They botched the case. And I still can't say that he committed the crime, but by the time they brought him in, the evidence didn't exist anymore.
How many murders could be tied to this individual, do you think?
Well, I can't say I can put any number on him because I can't, again, say that he is guilty of anything.
Well, let's not say him. When I say this individual, I'm saying the killer. Whoever the killer might be.
Oh, well, since then, we're talking about a crime. When this woman was murdered, it was an absolutely extraordinarily brutal rape, an extraordinarily brutal homicide. She was also eviscerated with a large stick. We're not talking about a one-time murderer. We're talking about a serial killer. So I clearly knew this wasn't his first crime because it was too... It was not a first-timer's type of crime.
All right, so you believe that this killer, whoever it may be, has killed how many times?
Oh, gosh, well, who knows? Well, he had probably killed before 1990, and if he's still out there, it's been 20 years, so add him up.
are people
If you just look at this fellow out in California, you heard of the Grim Sleeper?
Yeah, they just picked him up.
They just caught him, and it was 1980s he started killing black prostitutes in his neighborhood. And then he, after about 10 women died, he vanished, and he showed back up a few years ago, and now they've caught him in a really brilliant DNA thing where they got familial DNA because they had some DNA and they from the new crime, and they were able to match it to a guy that was in prison, turned out to be his son.